Hello, and welcome to Batflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. You join us in the midst of civil war. But before we get to that, let's see who's here. Our own sort of Welsh wizard. Yeah, he's all right. Neil Kinnock impression, people. Darius Austin. How are you, Darius? You've been driving all day.
I have been driving all day. It turns out that East Anglia is a really long way from Wales. Who would have thought it? But I have made it home and here in time for a podcast. So, yeah, I'm doing well, thank you.
I know who would have thought it, Neil Kinnock.
Yeah, they would have known, yeah.
Yeah, he would definitely know. And he's back from training with the youth team, our own AA whiz, Ben Carter. Opening day this weekend, Ben. How did it go?
Didn't go great. Start the season as you mean to go on. I'm nothing if not consistent in that regard.
Nothing sounds appropriate from what you've told us.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I deserve that. But no, it's good weather for it, which is rare for British baseball. So it was good fun.
Excellent. You're not going to give your stats, so I will. 0-6. and you lost on a walk-off, so there you go.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah, it's going all right. And last, and by all means least, is our man with the most mainstream taste in independent baseball teams. It's Tom Pringle, and he's got his own theme music today. Yes, hate is all around, Tom.
I have no idea what that music is. Who is it?
Well, why would you? It's Hate by the Delgados. All you need is hate, and all you did need was hate, and all you are filled with is pus and hate and nastiness. But by the way, just moving swiftly on from that, cheating in an online poll, how dare you? We're going to start calling you some names, and you know what they are. I understand, Tom, that you are actually going to your first ever live baseball game on Wednesday, aren't you?
It's Thursday.
Lots of beers.
Yes. I am going.
Thursday. Yeah. You have lots of beers, aren't you?
Loads of beers at the Christian University hosting Bowie's Creek. As John knows, because he's read the DMs, they don't sell beer, so that's fairly disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. The Bowie's Creek Astros or the Straight Edge Teetotal Temperance Society Baseball Club.
I'm going to get some limited edition merch because the team will no longer exist after 2019. So the Bowie's Creek Astros will move to Fayetteville and be called something else from 2020 onwards. So I'm going to get some limited edition merch. It's essentially the Astros star with BC in the middle. That's it. There's nothing fancy.
But that's still a lot of fun. And you're taking along a bunch of your squaddies to have a bit of a... Is that what you call them, technical term?
The lads. No, I'm going to take some of the crew along. They've shown zero interest, so my plan is to drag them along, tell them there's beer there, and then go, oh no, there isn't. I'm going to sit here with a copy of Baseball America. You do what you like.
Well,
you've half paid for my Uber, so I'm quite happy with that.
Well, hopefully there'll be some hot dogs, even if there's no beer. So Bowie's Creek Astros, that's going to be a fun one. Have they got any good prospects? Have you looked it up?
I think the Astros have, but I haven't properly looked up who's down there at the moment. I don't think there's anyone that's at sort of the top of the order right now, but Darius might be able to correct me later if he can quickly look at it.
I mean, I can have a quick look at their roster. I have no idea who's on it, nor am I particularly familiar with their team. They're quite a low-level affiliate, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're Class A advanced, so, yeah, they're really low. And there's no one else around at all that's playing at that time. The Durham Bulls are around where I'm going, but... Yeah, they're not playing, which is a bit unfortunate. So, yeah, it's baseball. It'll do.
Yeah, well, there you go, Bowie's Creek Astros. Hopefully you're listening in to that absolutely fulsome endorsement of your product. We'll ask you again next week if it'll do. Anyway, let's move on. Enough of all that. There's loads to get through this week. But we want to start, I guess, on a somber note by wishing our very best to White Sox pitcher Danny Farke, who was hospitalized during their game on Saturday following a brain hemorrhage. Whatever your allegiances, this game that we all love is bigger than them, and I'm sure that we can all place aside those alliances to spare our thoughts for Danny and his family this week and beyond. Keep fighting, big guy. Right. that out of the way, let's talk about something a bit more fun and exciting that's happened in baseball this week, which was a man flying out to right field. That man was Brandon Belt, and it came on the 21st pitch of his at-bat. So, Ben, you're going to break it down pitch by pitch, aren't you? Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, let's break it down pitch by pitch. Settle in, folks. So, I guess before we get to pitch one, we should probably just set the scene out at Angel Stadium. So, a crisp day. Okay, no, we're not actually going to do that. Yeah, it was a long at-bat. Pretty dull if you actually watched it live, I guess, because I wasn't watching it live. I just watched like the mashup put together. But really impressive from Belt to foul off that many pitches. So I don't know if any of you guys have ever tried to hit a baseball, but it's quite hard to do. It's even harder to try and hit it deliberately foul. So to do that, I think he did it 11 times in a row at one point, 12 times in a row at one point, was pretty impressive. And it was fun to see like the dugout getting really into it. And the poor pitcher, absolutely exhausted. He threw like 29 pitches without getting an out and then 49 pitches in the inning and didn't give up a run, which is pretty impressive in a not very impressive way if you're into efficient pitching. But yeah, it was a pretty cool moment. Not as cool as Bartolo Colon striking someone out on 20 pitches or Alex Cora hitting a home run on the 18th pitch in that bat. But a major league record is a major league record. And that seems like a Brandon Belt-ish record to hold.
Yeah, Darius is our resident Brandon Belt, baby giraffe, fan club member. Would you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, he does see a lot of pitches. I also, like Ben, did not watch it live. I just watched the condensed version, so I believe it lasted almost 13 minutes in real time, which is quite incredible. But there were four or five in the 21 that were basically right down the pipe that I think he probably should have got hold of a little bit better. But yeah, at the same time, impressive to stay alive for that long. I guess maybe this says a little something about the quality of Jaime Barrios' stuff as well, that Brandon Belt was able to make contact with that many consecutive pitches. Yeah, quite an impressive feat. And I'd have to agree with Ben that if you were going to give Brandon Belt a record, this seems like the kind of record that he would hold.
But he has homered in four games in a row, hasn't he?
Yeah, obviously that's now going to be his record. I have no idea what the record for homering in the most games in a row is, but that would be a super weird record for Brandon Belt to hold.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the name that sprung to mind. Certainly not even the man who has the initials BB for the San Francisco Giants who would first spring to mind for that particular record, consecutive games homered in. Of course, I am talking about Billy Bonds from his famous spell over there when he left West Ham for the Giants back in the day. That's him. I couldn't even think of someone with a different surname. I managed to get a different first name. Oh, I've got a different first name from Barry. Oh, shit, Bonds. Tripped myself up there. How are the Giants doing? I was just looking it up there. They're improving, aren't they? Oh, no. 9-12.
I mean, that is a bit of an improvement, but yeah, it's been pretty middling. You know, they've had some decent comeback wins. They've had some pretty terrible games, to be honest. Most of the season, the offense has not been doing anything, so it's nice to see Belt actually get going. But yeah, overall, it's not been all that exciting. I haven't seen a ton of things that make me think that the lineup is going to be incredible or anything. But yeah, if Belt comes around and Posey, and I mean, Longoria hasn't done much yet, as Tom can tell you all too well. So I think there's probably, you know, they look kind of like a 500-ish team right now. Which is not all that far from off what we thought, I guess. But the Diamondbacks look a lot better. So, yeah, probably not great for the Giants.
Oh, well, at least Johnny Cueto's been good. So there is that. Transitioning from one scuffling pitcher who has turned it round and put it all together and been good to another who has maybe not quite managed to do that. Matt Harvey, the Dark Knight, or as I dubbed him on Twitter earlier today, the Out of the Park Knight, with the number of home runs he's been given up, and the fact that he is going to be spending the large majority of the rest of the Mets season, well, at the moment at least, not in the park because he's going to be in the bullpen. He's been taken out of the rotation. What's going on, guys? Tom, I don't know if you had any thoughts on this. Has he been unlucky or has it been coming for a while?
I think it's been coming for a while, really, hasn't it? It's a bit of a kick in the teeth for him. And he did that whole I can't think of the name of the closer, Hudson Street thing, where he was saying, I'm a starter, I'm always a starter, I'm going to be a starter, I'll forever be a starter, in an interview. And it was clear that he was setting himself up for a big fall there. I think it was 2014 he was out with Tommy John. And in 2015 he came back and just kept, we ended up having that palaver of, is he going to pitch in the postseason, is he going to pitch? And Scott Boras saying, coming out saying he is going to be limited. I think, although clearly he had a great season, that was probably peak time for the Mets to trade him. I know they didn't really want to because they still had control of him. But looking back, and obviously hindsight's a great thing, it would have been the perfect time to get rid of him. Because he just seems to have been in this downward spiral. I mean, you just mentioned the fact that he's letting some home runs go out. Last season, he had a home run per nine of 2.04. And before that, he wasn't even above one for the whole of his career. So it seems like he's had a bad year last year, and it's just going to continue this year.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the case. Of course, he's had thoracic outlet syndrome, the new Tommy John, the killer of careers, apart from Tyson Ross, of course, who's doing okay for the Padres so far this year. Is that right, Ben? Do you think that's it? Thoracic outlet syndrome is going to be the one that kills pitchers these days, because not many of them seem to come back from that.
Could be, yeah. I've seen a lot more of it seems like, lately than we had beforehand, and maybe I was just ignorant to it then. But yeah, this is a bit of a killer for poor Matt Harvey. It's a shame because he was so dominant for that sort of 2-3 year stretch, and now it's a bit sad to watch him kind of wasted away at a reasonably young age for a pitcher. Maybe the move to the bullpen will help. I can't imagine it will, especially South with Mets fans, because they waited like 5 years for that power five to finally all be in the rotation together. And then they got one turn in the rotation and now Harvey's gone. But that kind of sums up being a Met fan, doesn't it? And they're doing quite well anyway, so I'm not going to give them much sympathy. But yeah, poor Matt Harvey. Not his year, it looks like.
Do you think there's any strategy in it? I mean, obviously Harvey's been quite poor, but the Mets have seen from a couple of their previously starting pitchers who've been moved to the bullpen in Seth Lugo and Robert Gsellman. Do you think maybe they're thinking, well, it's worked for them, could work for Harvey, or is it really a last throw of the dice?
That might have expedited the process, definitely, that they've seen success with it before. And I think if you profile what Matt Harvey has when he's on, which is a power fastball and a power slider, that kind of thing tends to perform pretty well out of the bullpen. If he can notch it up towards 96, 97, I could see him being a pretty effective reliever. But it's just a matter of whether he can do that or not. You know, if he's giving up home runs as a starter, he might just give up more of them in high leverage situations, which wouldn't be ideal. But it's definitely an experiment worth taking, in my opinion.
What do you reckon then, Darius? Do you think they still need him, or do you think they can do this because they're in a bit of a position of depth and strength for starting pitchers?
Yeah, I definitely think they don't need him. I mean, they certainly don't need this version of Matt Harvey right now. With Syndergaard and DeGrom healthy and Wheeler looking much better, it doesn't, you know, really seem like that they need Matt Harvey to go out and do anything much. And I think if they can find a way to extract any kind of positive value from him right now, then I think it's worth trying, because it doesn't seem to be working all that well for him in the rotation. I think a few people have made the very valid point as well that Mickey Callaway has recently presided over some good starters kind of transitioning to the bullpen and back in Carlos Carrasco. Mike Clevinger did the same thing, I think, and Danny Salazar, well, that Cleveland is still working on that, but I think that's certainly something that Callaway has gone through before, and perhaps that maybe factors a little bit into the Mets thinking, and that they're certainly not seeing this as a permanent move, but maybe an opportunity for him to work on things from a slightly different perspective, and maybe if it turns out well, and I'm sure one of those other pitchers will get injured down the road, then maybe Harvey will get another chance to start if he can iron a few things out as a reliever. So I think it's worth a try. And at this point in Harvey's career, I don't think the Mets have lost a huge amount if it doesn't work, because he doesn't really look like he should be in a major league rotation a lot of the time.
Yeah, true. Just an aside before we move on, we are going to transition to talk about the Cleveland Indians, or specifically a Cleveland Indian, but you mentioned Mike Clevinger there, and I watched his pitching performance against my favourite team, the Baltimore Orioles, on Saturday. He looked really good. I was really impressed. He's never been a guy with particularly overpowering stuff, but he kind of had a bit of the old Kyle Hendricks going on, this sort of funky delivery, spotting it wherever he wanted. It was quite enjoyable. I mean, you've got to understand that he's against the older free swinging birds. He was looking an awful lot better than Chris Tillman, who just looked like every single ball that got hit was going to go onto Utah Street, and indeed quite a few of them did. which I rather enjoyed from a Schadenfreude point of view. I haven't quite got to my stage of watching the Orioles where I've begun to feel for them, I'm afraid, Orioles fans, but I'm sure it'll come. Right. Cleveland Indians. Indeed, Francisco Lindor, the man who upset some people this week by being happy about doing something good in his stricken homeland. Indeed, he hit a homer in Puerto Rico in the Puerto Rico series against the Minnesota Twins, and he celebrated like a young, exuberant superstar of baseball, and he pissed some people off. Does anyone have any thoughts on that except, shut up, you silly old fools? Anyone? I guess from the sniggering that's...
I really want like Tom to just do the devil's advocate take here and say that this is completely the right take.
Tom's going to play his heel character again.
Come on, Tom. Be the heel.
I can't. Even on this situation, I just can't do it. How ridiculous is it that people are getting upset, that people are excited? I think people should be celebrating every single run. When people come into the dugout and they've, it's a pitcher who's gone two innings and he's given away five home runs and the team is in a shit state as it is, and they're all giving him a high five and saying, well done, good effort and all that. So you're like, no, come on. He's done terrible. Blank him for a bit, for fuck's sake. But if somebody's scoring runs, you should be celebrating that. You should be enjoying that moment. I don't understand why people are getting such a sad on about it. This whole unwritten rules of baseball and be classy and show respect to the game and everything. It's just when it suits that team and that person that's saying it. In a flip round situation, they'd be celebrating like mad as well.
Yes, it absolutely is. Hate is all around and we do not enjoy it. Is Brian Dozier the new, what's he called? Astros catcher, also called Brian. That's the one who's famous for policing this crap. Inside, Dozier seems to be getting a bit of a reputation for being a wally in these situations.
Yeah, I think he and Justin Verlander seem to be fighting for the title early on this season, don't they? So he certainly seems to have wrested that away from McCann, who I think we probably gave McCann a hard time for like two incidents that happened in fairly close proximity. And I think since then he's been stuck with unwritten rules, law enforcement. So Dozier seems to have taken it on a bit more seriously, I think. But yeah, it's as Tom says, it seems to be applied when it suits the team. And the thing I find strange about it is that Lindor's obviously not out there trying to show people up. He's in his home country celebrating a home run in front of a bunch of fans who are going crazy for him. It's like, I think the last thing he's thinking of is, oh yeah, this will be great if I show up the pitcher by celebrating. He's just in a state of euphoria. Same as old Joey Bats and the bat flip, which was came at the end of an incredibly emotional inning. I think these things are great to see. We like to see players celebrating. I think it makes them more relatable and makes the game a lot more fun. So it's bizarre to me that people can react negatively towards this display of joy. But yeah, I guess that the hate is all around, as you keep alluding to.
Yeah,
not to defend Brian Dozier, because I don't know. I had to type in Brian Dozier, Francisco Lindor into Google and see what came up to find out what the quote was, because I had no idea. So Twinkie Town, which is the SB Nation name for the Twins blog, I would not have guessed that. they said that the Twins did not complain about Francisco Lindor's home run. And it eventually goes on to say, this post, everyone is jumping to the conclusion that the Twins complained or upset about Lindor's home run because Brian Dozier said all that crap about a bunt a couple of weeks ago. In reality, the Twins haven't complained about Lindor. So according to this one source, this one blog that is Twins-based, they're saying that Francisco Lindor just gave this apology without any prompting, which I cannot believe.
No, that sounds like a likely story. For those of you who are just joining us or indeed weren't here whilst we were talking before we started, I have curry powder on my hands and I have just rubbed my eyes again. So there you go. That's going to be fun for the rest of the podcast, everybody. Tom did ask perceptively whether I'd made a curry. I have, people, before speaking to you all through the internet. Right, a couple of thoughts popped into my head there that weren't on the schedule, but I feel the need to A, make them, and B, ask them. So Verlander, has anybody seen the clip of Verlander from yesterday where the lady just kept shouting "you suck" at him for the whole game? And he made a homemade sign that said "no, you suck," and I held it up to her over the dugout. So it's give with one hand and take away with the other with old JV. But yeah, you mentioned somebody who I probably should have put on the rundown there, Darius, which was the Florida Fire Frogs third baseman, Jose Bautista. Ben, as the resident expert in fielding and batting and pitching, do you think that a 37-year-old man can transition from right field to third base and contribute productively at major league level?
I can't wait to see it. I'm going to avoid saying yes or no because I think it's probably going to be a no, and I quite like to see Bautista do well. But it'll be interesting to watch big-bodied Jose try and scoop some grounders down at third. I don't think he's going to do very well at it. I don't even know if they're going to let him do it, to be honest. It's only a minor league deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
It'd be pretty awesome to watch him bat flip a couple more times before he properly calls time on his career. And indeed, to watch him flail at ground balls in the 5-6 hole every other inning for the Braves.
The thing about Jose is he loves a showbiz play, doesn't he? No one loved an outfield assist to first base more than Jose. So he's just going to be absolute airmail. Like, I hope Atlanta have extended the netting because he's going to be firing them into the first base side from here, there, and everywhere.
At least Freddie Freeman's pretty athletic over there at first.
Yeah, he is. And Freddie Freeman's going to have to be careful because he wears glasses. You could just see Jose beaning him and he just isn't getting the cut face in. He loves an injury anyway, Freddie.
I'd like to give a special mention to Blue Jays Corner at the recent London meetup, because one of those guys did actually put on the bold predictions wall that Jose Bautista will play baseball again. He didn't say what level, but he just said he will play baseball again. So that's one bold prediction down.
Does this count? I think it should be Major League.
Well, he wrote baseball, and I said, are you saying what level? I said to him, what level are you saying? And he said, none. It's just, he will play baseball again.
I think we should have disqualified it on the spot.
Tom, what is this revelation that you were speaking to people from Blue Jays fandom? I thought that they just all sat on their own and didn't speak to anyone. Anyway, moving swiftly on from a controversial topic to, I don't know whether I should play a funeral march or I should get haters all around again, because we're going to talk about Joey Votto. It's not good, guys, is it? I was looking up his numbers. He's scuffling. He's scuffling. Our favorite collective player on this podcast, 337 on base percentage, which sounds all right, doesn't it? But he's usually about 450. His slugging percentage is 257. He is at the moment the master of the single that trickles into the outfield. It's a bit of an odd one because I was doing a bit of research on Joey this afternoon, and he's not swinging at balls outside the strike zone. He's hitting the ball quite hard, hitting more line drives than fly balls this year. So maybe they're not falling in. But what's happening? Is he just sort of waiting for a bit of regression? Is this just a bit of a trough for him, Darius? It sort of seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I've reached the point with Votto that I just assume that everything he does is deliberate. So I have to assume that this in some way is a ruse to make pitchers think, oh, Votto's not the same old Votto. We can get him out in these ways. And he's going to spend like the remaining 5 months OPSing 1,400 and walking in half his plate appearances and making all those pitchers regret their decisions very much. So we've seen him have very slow starts before. I think he did this last year or the year before, or maybe not to this extent, but he's had very slow starts in the past and then gone on absolute tears. So, yeah, I have absolute faith in Votto's ability at the plate. And I think maybe, you know, he's just trying something. I think we've seen him do this before, you know, swing more, swing less, swing at certain pitches, just whatever it might be. And I think overall he'll be able to turn it on and be the elite hitter we know he can be. So I'm not worried, but yeah, ask me again in 6 weeks, and if it's the same, then maybe I will be.
Yeah, I watched the Reds over the weekend against the Cardinals, and they were scuffling away. They were 3-0 down in the top of the eighth. They had batters get to second and third. Young fire thrower Jordan Hicks was on the mound. Votto just does the most Votto thing, fouls off a couple of balls, takes the walk, leaves it to everybody else. It's just like, has there ever been a team superstar who is more comfortable just taking the walk? Yeah, I should probably try and knock someone in here, but they got the three runs, and then Yadi knocked one in the bottom of the eighth, unfortunately. So it wasn't to be.
Punchy Yadi.
What, sorry?
Punchy Yaddy. Have you not seen the video of him going for Tori Lavullo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have. Adding to his mythos of being one of the most arrestingly annoying baseball players. Yeah, we're going to talk about another one of those slightly shortly. Any other thoughts on Votto, or do we think Darius has probably nailed it there?
Can I be boring and read some WRC Plus from Votto's career by month?
Please do.
But I'm literally just going to read numbers now for people that aren't aware. Weighted Plus.
Is this an electronic track?
This goes from March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. So far, Votto's career throughout those months, 143, 100 is average. Anything above 100 is great. 143, 157, 154, 158, 172, 159. So he's never really had a slumping month. He's never really had a problem. His lowest is 143. This season, so far, he's got 71 as his WRC Plus. It's not fucking great.
Yeah, but...
To Darius's point earlier, he struggled in April the last few years. I think last year we saw him do that weird thing where he had like the highest first pitch swinging percentage in all of baseball for a couple of weeks, which is not the Joey Votto we know. So I'm kind of inclined to agree with Darius, where he just sort of messes around a little bit in April and tries out some things, and then it doesn't work. So he just goes back to being an on-base machine for the rest of the year. So I'm not too concerned about him. But you have to say it's a shame for the Reds because, you know, if he'd been batting well at 3-18, I mean, they could have been really doing well this season if he'd been swinging the bat. This would have been the time for them to turn it on. So real missed opportunity for them. You know, that might be the playoffs slipping away now.
Yep, I'm not gonna talk any more about the Reds because if we recall, I was quite high on them. I said they were going to be the surprise team of the season, and the surprise is that they are even worse than everybody else predicted. Their pitching is just absolutely rotten. Okay, from one player who has come through some struggles and is working through some struggles to another. And that's, of course, the greatest all-rounder in the history of the game of baseball. Our man, Beefy Ohtani, as I've decided to dub him, after another famous all-rounder. He's obviously not struggling, is he? But he looked pretty crap against the Red Sox. I don't know if you watched any of that, Tom.
I didn't actually watch the condensed game. All I saw was the headline that the Red Sox had mashed up Ohtani, and then after actually reading the story a bit more, realised he'd come out the game after two innings with a blister. But he'd only given away three runs at that point, so I don't know how bad it actually looked. I imagine it was all down the middle.
So I was saying, Ben, we haven't had your takes on superlative or otherwise yet this season, so do you want to fill us in on your views?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I don't really have much to add to what
Ben's gone with
on Shohei this season. Which is that he's been really impressive, especially considering he didn't do so well in spring training. Pitching and hitting is really tough to do. I should know. I'm really good at both of them. So I have a lot of sympathy for him in that regard, struggling to adapt to kind of, hitting three times a week, pitching once a week, etc. But he's done well. And like you say, he got roughed up by Boston. Looked like, as you mentioned, he was hanging every breaking ball, things like that, which is going to happen every now and again, especially for, he's still 23 years old, isn't he? For a young guy learning his craft. So, I'm cautiously optimistic that he can keep up this pretty strong start for the rest of the season. If not with the bat, then at least with the ball in hand. An exciting time to be a baseball fan because we're not going to see anyone like him for a while, if I had to guess.
Or probably ever, one would assume. But, let's not say never. Okay, so Ohtani, just a blip on the radar. Another team that, I hope they're a blip on the radar because no one would like to see fans of this club being excited because, boy, don't you know about it when they are. Hello, Toronto Blue Jays fans. How are you? It's been a while. We didn't talk about you much last season because, you were terrible. But you're good this year, which is nice for you. And I guess for everybody else, as the Red Sox contingent, we are obviously not too disappointed that you're good because we're still five games ahead of you. But anyway, Blue Jays look like a good team this season. They've done a few things in the offseason that were a bit different. Brought in Randall Grichuk. Obviously, Lourdes Gurriel has been called up. Teoscar Hernandez is getting a lot of reps. He looks like he maybe fits at the big leagues. Moved on from a few of their veterans, including the aforementioned Joey Bats. Russell Martin's grown one of the worst haircuts I've ever seen. Lots of change there. Anyone want to take that one? Any suggestions as to why the Blue Jays are are looking better? Is it just that they were always good but struggling a bit?
Their opponents haven't been great so far. I know, admittedly, they've beaten... did they beat a series against... They won a series against the Yankees. They've beaten the White Sox in a series, the Rangers in a series, the Orioles in a series, and the Royals in a series. So they're
also all of the worst teams in baseball, basically.
Yeah, it's not been great. Their team batting WRC plus is 102, so only slightly above average. Their starters have been pretty bad, but the bullpen's looking all right. That's my in-depth analysis by staring at Fangraphs leaderboards, as I've not watched a single Blue Jays game.
I actually did watch the Blue Jays the other day against the Yankees. I watched until I could watch no longer. I mean, I was the loser in that, even though there was an actual loser in the game, because obviously I have no love for either team. Marcus Stroman was pitching. He got an absolutely giant home run hit off him by Aaron Judge. He made an absolutely brilliant double play, actually. So fair play for that. He looks like he's struggling. Has anybody else watched Stroman this season? It just doesn't look right at all.
I've not seen him, but the control numbers are very concerning. But yeah, I think you're probably right that they were, you know, probably a bit better than we saw out of them last season. I think Donaldson is a great player if he's healthy and can throw, which he couldn't to start the year, but hopefully the shoulder is healing. I know Teoscar Hernandez is somebody a lot of people in fantasy circles are excited about, and he certainly looks like a lot of fun. So I very much doubt he'll keep this up, but if he could be a 2-3 win player for them, that would be a big, big help. And I kind of like their stuff around the margins. Getting Salate was a nice deal. I'm sure Tom can tell us all about him, but he's a very handy role player type guy, play a few different positions. I think he's very reliable. And I really buy into the Justin Smoak turnaround as well. I think he's turned a corner there and he can be a good defensive force for them at the plate. So I don't think they're going to be a top 3 or 4 team in the AL, but you mentioned all the teams they beat. I mean, you start to run out of other teams who are going to end up in that 4th or 5th spot for the wild cards, you know. Once you get past the top 4, I think that 5th spot is very much open for the Blue Jays. And I think sometimes just beating all the bad teams is what you need to do to make that in the second wild card era.
What about J.A. Happ? The J.A. standing for Jolly Awesome. Pretty good. I think he might be, you know, one of those guys no one really talks about, but he looks a bit like an ace, and he has done for a little while now. So I think if with Stroman struggling, I think he's the guy that they'll lean on, and I think he's good enough to be the workhorse for them. So big up J.A.
His head looks like an actual egg, both in terms of its baldness and its shape. It looks like, do you remember that 90s video game Dizzy, based on J.A. Happ?
Yeah, I do remember Dizzy. Yeah.
It's a new market inefficiency with heads like eggs.
Who else would be there? Can Greg Wallace pitch?
Brett Gardner?
he's definitely there.
I don't know.
Answers on a postcard. Who's got a head like an egg on your team?
Yeah. Bartolo looks a bit like someone's tried to do an Easter decorated egg of Lionel Richie, and it's all gone wrong.
Or just an egg that's been out in the sun for a little bit.
An Easter looks egg. Like he likes an egg or 10. So there you go, people. Answers on a postcard. That's going to be our next competition. Baseball players with heads like eggs to go on the team with J.A. Happ and Brett Gardner. That was a huge shout. Blue Jays fans, it's been some good, some bad, but more good than bad, and a bit more good. Just a bit of news to keep you posted on. In the next week or couple of weeks, we're going to have an interview with the former Blue Jays Major League pitcher, Scott Richmond, who's pitching in Italy this season. Scott and I are going to have a bit of a conversation, and we'll get that to you. So hopefully that'll be a bit of fun for you Blue Jays guys to hear from one of your old pitchers, who also did some great things for Canada in the World Baseball Classic too. Right, moving from one giant of the AL East to another, indeed two giants, Giancarlo Stanton, Gary Sanchez. Which of these two utterly awful players is worse, Ben?
Probably Stanton, because they seem to boo him more, and Yankee fans are notoriously rational when it comes to judging their own players. So I have to give them the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Yeah, the booing is really grim, I have to say. Even though it's making me snigger, it's just completely unbelievable. I don't know if you are sniggering as much as I am, Tom, at Giancarlo struggles.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, it'd be great to see him mashing, but then I'm quite enjoying the fact that the Red Sox are winning so much, and you know the big three, only one of them's actually really performing out of them. I don't know. I think there's a little bit inside me. I'm like, oh, it's a bit of a shame. It'd be great to have a competitor right now. I'm sure that'll, you know, change as the season goes along. The fact the Red Sox have lost two on the bounce and already Red Sox fans are calling for Cora's head, which doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I don't think it's going to last. I'm not really enjoying it that much. It's still a little bit funny.
He did a Grady Little, though, Tom. He left David Price in for precisely one batter too many. And you just wouldn't do that if he'd pitched only 94 pitches and been absolutely brilliant for the whole game and pretty much the whole season. You'd definitely bring him out, wouldn't you? Because all rational people would definitely do that, wouldn't they? No. Anyway, enough. Sanchez, by the way, I mean, everyone's talking about Stanton and his slash line is just unbelievable. The slugging percentage isn't bad, but he's hitting at a 185 average and a 283 OBP. And even as a big strikeout guy, that's like Joey Gallo in his first season numbers. It's just unbelievable. Sanchez his on base percentage is 222, just unreal. Like that's a 188 average. So his walk rate is just bizarre. It's just so bad. It's not even true. He's also been awful behind the plate. Like, he just looks like he doesn't know what he's doing. I just can't see him being sustainable as a catcher for, I mean, I know he's going to hit, so you can put up with him scuffling about behind there, but he looks like he doesn't know where the ball's going. Whenever anything isn't like right down the pipe, he looks like he's, you know, doing a mime to try and catch it. It's just terrible. And you know, I hate his face. It's a face that I would just want to turn the television off as soon as it comes on it. It makes me really angry. And I feel for him back there. He genuinely looks like he's a flipping clown act.
I can't remember that stat on Fangraphs. Face hatedness. Is he quite high on the average levels?
Well, you know, on Fangraphs, there's loads of tabs. Yeah. And the further you down you get, the more esoteric and the deeper the analysis you have to do to understand it is. It's pretty much the last tab, like it's a secret tab.
Oh, I don't touch that one. That's probably why. I should look into that.
Yeah, it's next to looking like an egg-edness.
Probably quite high on that too, to be fair.
Gary Sanchez.
A bit eggy, or Gary.
He'd be a rotten egg. Anyway.
You must be joking.
So well, didn't it? So yeah, they're both struggling. I hope I'm like you, Tom. I really hope they get through it because, you know, good players are good players, and let's not kid ourselves. They're both very good players, and watching majestic home runs is fun no matter who's hitting them and what uniform they're wearing. Although I must say, Giancarlo in the pinstripes, there's a lot of cloth going on there, and it just looks odd, doesn't it? Nobody else think that.
No, I'm with you. And I'm still not happy with Adrian Gonzalez wearing a Mets uniform. It looks so strange, and I don't think I'll ever get used to it.
Anyway, any more thoughts on Sanchez or Stanton from you, Darius, before we take this onto a rather more together note?
Well, I do think you're letting Gary Sanchez's face colour your opinion of his catching ability, because he actually rates pretty well. I know Yankees fans have really put the boot on him behind the plate, but like all the framing numbers, actually, I think he's pretty good. He's got a cannon of an arm. I think he's pretty good at catching base stealers. And as you mentioned, even if he's not that good behind the plate, they can definitely stomach it with his bat. So I think he'll be fine. And yeah, I think Stanton, he doesn't seem to have carried over some of the sort of strikeout reduction from last year. But I think we've seen even Mike Trout go through periods where he struck out a bunch and he figured it out just fine and still produced a lot even while he was striking out. So I'm not worried. I think probably disappointingly for Red Sox fans, but good for baseball that both of them will figure it out. And perhaps I'm underrated just how much difference it makes just seeing different pitches in a different environment for Stanton. You know, the batter's eye will be different. The atmosphere is obviously very different from Miami. And I think given a bit of time, he'll be fine.
hey, doesn't matter if you support a club who only needs to go 500 for the rest of the season to make the playoffs, which Tom and I both do. So we'll move on. Last order of business today. I thought it would be nice, given we've had, you know, a decent number of games, 20 something games for most clubs now, to pick a breakout star of the season so far, someone who's really caught our eye and who we think might carry some of that form forward and be an exciting player to watch. I don't know who wants to go first. I know who Tom's going to say, and I dread to leave that last, so we're going to leave that one somewhere in the middle of the pack. And we'll go with you, Darius. How about you go first?
Am I allowed to say Matt Chapman, or does that not count?
Oh, yeah, you are. I thought you might say Sean Manaea, actually, but you can stay in the
same. I was also going to bring up for balance the fact that the Red Sox got no hit this weekend, and we haven't brought it up, but we've talked about how bad the Yankees are and how we don't believe in the Blue Jays.
That's an absolutely fair point. We should actually talk about that.
And lost to Daniel Mengden, who looks like he should be a barista in Shoreditch.
Yeah, I think he is in the offseason.
Yeah, he is. He definitely...
Yeah, so
you're not being
well.
Very good. Although there were two hits in that game, so it's technically not a no hitter.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for the backlash from A's fans. It's always you as well, John. It's unusual that I had the one with the Blue Jays fans, but it's always
let the record show that I defended the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and that I brought up the no hitter before talking about how great Matt Chapman is.
I was going to bring it up. I thought it was absolutely excellent, and I think he's a really, really good pitcher. But anyway, Matt Chapman, like, we're digressing here. Let's not talk about things that don't matter when you're already 17-2. Carry on.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Chapman looks every bit of the defensive star at third base I thought he was going to be, and he looks like he's taken a step forward with the bat. So right now he looks like a bona fide superstar. I think there's probably a little bit of regression coming offensively, but he is walking more, he's striking out less, he's got a ton of power, and yeah, he's a joy to watch at third base. So I think they've got a potential superstar on their hands over there. And I think the likes of Sean Manaea are probably very glad to see him standing over there near third base, because I think he's going to make a lot of extra outs for them.
You were big on Chapman in our preseason previews, and yeah, it looks like you know what you're talking about when it comes to fantasy baseball and all that stuff. Anyway, Tom, go on. You go now. Just say it and we can move on.
What do you mean? This is what I'm going to call Mr. Unsustainable, the man who currently leads the majors in WRC Plus with 236, is Christian Villanueva. He's clearly the greatest batsman we've ever seen. 355 average, a 444 OBP, and a slugging percentage of 774. He has a BABIP, an unsustainable BABIP of 441. There is no way this is going to continue. This man is the luckiest hitter alive. He has a strikeout rate of 29.2% and a walk rate of 8.3%. It's not going to last. People are paying big for him in fantasy. But you know what? He's a Padre, so I'm going to pick him.
Right. Well, you actually surprised me by not picking Joey Lucchese. But before I give you an opportunity to speak back to that, I'm going to move swiftly on to my own choice, which is Blake Snell, who's been unbelievable. I mean, this guy just does not look anything like the pitcher who we've seen up and down between AAA and the majors over the last couple of seasons. He's 3-1 in five games, although that's in a Rays team where his run support has been, to be fair, pretty wretched. He has been absolute mustard. His K9 rate is 10.16. He is not giving up any home runs. He just looks like an absolute machine. His pitch mix has changed substantially. He's throwing his really good curveball a lot more, and he's mixing in a slider. There was a really good piece by Joel from Four Bases about that pitch mix, so make sure you check that out, and some great analysis by the ever awesome Eno Saris about where he's releasing the ball from. He's getting the point between his curveball and his slider much closer together and making people not know what's coming. So yeah, Blake Snell looks like a really, really good pitcher and makes up for the fact that Chris Archer is struggling a little bit. He's doing what he always does and getting a lot of strikeouts and giving up a lot of home runs. He's basically like Rick Porcello, but with more charisma. No one's ever said that about Chris Archer before, and probably no one ever will again. So yeah, Blake Snell. I hope I haven't stolen yours, Ben.
No, you haven't. Blake Snell has been really good, and he comes from that Zach Davies mold of pitchers who look like they should still be at school. but he has been terrific, especially for a 13-year-old schoolboy.
He looks quite like you, actually, Ben.
You think?
Yeah, I was going to say, coming from rugged Ben Carter.
Maybe I'm left-handed. Oh.
Yeah, that's it.
We found it.
What the problem's been.
Next week I'm going to be so good when I go out on the field. Anyway, I was going to talk about Jorge Soler because he's been actually surprisingly good this year for the Royals, even though no one cares about the Royals and no one cares about Soler anymore, but he's looking like he's putting it all together. But I'm not going to talk about him. I'm going to talk about someone a little bit more obvious, and that is, of course, Adam Ottavino, who is striking out everyone for the Rockies. He literally is throwing a slider that could turn around corners and striking out. I think it's like almost two hitters an inning. It might have dipped below that now, but for a while it was that. And very, very unsustainable. But if he can cut down the walks, which he has done so far this year, he has got the stuff to be a pretty dominant reliever. Adam Ottavino has been a very bright spot out of that Rockies bullpen. The vaunted and rebuilt bullpen, but it's our longest tenured pitcher who's been the real star. So Adam Ottavino, good on you. Keep it going.
Excellent. Yes. How are the Rockies doing generally? We haven't had you're the only person whose team we've not talked about after Darius irritatingly brought up some things that I didn't want to dwell on for too long. But the Rockies, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. That bullpen's been good though, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. No, it's been up and down. It's been a bit disappointing because I think we've played the Padres 6 or 8 times already this season, and you feel like you need to win almost all of those games in this division. No offense to Tom and the Padres, but those are games that you need to be winning in the NL West. But we've also pulled out some pretty impressive results. I think we just split the series with the Cubs. We maybe lost it 2-1. The game last night was a bit frustrating. But we've shown we can hang it with the best of them, and that's with a rotation that's been not great so far. John Gray struggled. Some of the rookies from last year haven't taken a step forward that we might have expected them to. Chad Bettis has been awesome, though. We love Chad Bettis. And Nolan Arenado's back from suspension for throwing the worst punch in the history of on-field brawls. So I'm sort of quietly confident, especially now that David Dahl's been called up, that maybe we can challenge for a wildcard spot.
Yeah, no more Ian Desmond in that outfield, which is on one hand good, on the other hand bad. We all know what the bad hand is. Right. I think that's about all we've got time for, unless anyone's got anything that they feel the need to get off their chest before we let these lovely people get on with the rest of their day.
I've got very important information to impart.
Okay.
Highly relevant to absolutely no one except for Tom. But I can reliably report that Hector Perez and or Corbin Martin can be considered the best prospects on the Buies Creek Astros roster. both are right-handed pitching prospects. So therefore you may see neither of them play when you go. But they are the guys who are the most highly rated in the system at that level.
Absolutely perfect.
Who are they playing, Tom?
They're playing something called Ducks. I have no idea. Let me.
Oh, the Down East Wood Ducks.
That's them, yeah. Their merch looks so much better. I just don't think it's going to be there.
Oh, what a shame. Yeah, maybe you can hustle up and say, I've got 10 years US military experience. Literally, when I was at university, the line that a man said to be elected as a course representative, who do you think won out of that lineup? I've got 10 years US military experience. Yep, I'm definitely voting for him.
You are my guy. I'm taking you.
He owns a Bowie knife. Definitely him.
That's a very, very implied threat, I'd say.
Yeah, it was.
It's a bit Dwight Schrute, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit Dwight Schrute. You used to see that guy camped out in the library. He was a nice man. San Diego Padres fan, Tom, so you know, you'd have gone on well with him. That's it, isn't it? That's the end. The end of this podcast is me equating Tom to a fellow San Diego Padres military. Yeah, Tom, maybe you can. I know that you're taking some gifts out to the Buies Creek Astros. Maybe the Down East Wood Ducks have got similar taste in below average British beers. Maybe you can get in touch with them.
maybe. I don't know. I've already bought the beers now. I feel like I can't go back to the supermarket. It looks a bit weird buying average beer again.
People will talk. The lady in Asda's going to judge you for already having bought four cans of Green King IPA.
They'll just think you're one of those guys. Like, you know, you see those people whose weekly shops just like, you know, eight cans of beer and a pack of bacon. Just do that.
Some Vaseline and tissues and that's it.
Some Findus crispy pancakes.
Bird's eye potato waffles.
Okay, enough. The evening that brought us egg-headed baseball players, Findus crispy pancakes, and Green King IPA for baseball merchandise swaps. This has been the Bat Flips and Nerds podcast, which has given you more than ever a truly British take on baseball. And that's about all we've got time for. Thank you very much, and good night.
Bye.